Coming up on Over a Barrel.
If they're going to respond, what it looks like. So we'll leave it there. But I will say that oil markets, Matt, had an interesting response.
Over a Barrel starts right now. Welcome to Over a Barrel. I'm Matt McClain alongside Patrick DeHaan. Make sure that you like and subscribe to different areas where you listen, maybe Spotify, maybe some other podcast, delivery system that you may use. We're also online on Facebook as well as X, formerly known as Twitter. I am Over a Barrel, Matt. Patrick, you are
Gas Buddy Guy for those that are over on Twitter or X. Yeah. And you can email us too, Matt, podcast@gasbuddy.com. Our inbox is always open. Got some feedback as well from the couple of emails that we had a couple of weeks ago. So appreciate you reaching out, getting some positive feedback. It's always nice to hear.
Absolutely. And also even the show itself, the podcast Over a Barrel Show, can be found on X as well as Facebook. Well, now that we've got that out of the way, since the last podcast last week, wow, Patrick, we have had a lot of things that we need to unpack here. Let's talk about, obviously, unless you've been hiding under a rock, you are aware that Iran launched some 500 things, be it a drone, a missile, a ballistic missile toward Israel, and 99% of them were thwarted by the Israeli Defense Force, the United States, the United Kingdom, Jordan, and others. Now Israel is talking about, well, we're not really happy about this. So, quote unquote, in the words of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, quote, "Israel will do whatever it needs to defend itself," unquote. It is not over, or at least it certainly does not appear to be that way. So talk to us about what happened in the markets this past week. What's going on right now, and where do you think we're going?
Well, Matt, for those that were paying attention last week, the rhetoric was flying, right? There were people that were saying World War III was on the cusp. I mean, Iran had some pretty sharp and poignant words for Israel. But in the end, I mean, that's what got oil prices going last week, right? Oil jumped to a six-month high at about $87 a barrel. But, you know, as you mentioned, after the attack was certainly slowed down, as you mentioned, the U.S., the U.K., Jordan shooting down a lot of these missiles or projectiles and drones, Iran made it pretty clear. It was kind of odd, actually. Iran made it clear that this was their response and it was over. But now, as you mentioned, Israel has been discussing a potential response. And there's been a lot on social media about, you know, if they're going to respond, what it looks like. So we'll leave it there. But I will say that oil markets, Matt, had an interesting response. On Sunday night, oil prices actually did open by dropping a little bit. Now, at one point, oil prices were down 1%. And I think, Matt, it was because the overall consensus was sigh of relief, right? Iran was not very successful, and the U.S. has been exerting pressure on Israel not to respond. Now, we'll have to see if that's the case. So really, the question I've been asked is, you know, has the Middle East had an impact? Well, it did a little bit last week, but now the impact has been unwound. But Matt, as we stand here today, or sit rather, and talk about this, interesting developments also in the price of oil. And I'm sure you're probably staring at your screen. I am.
Yeah.
And, you know, oil now down nearly 3%. And more interestingly, Matt, I mean, this is the time of year we've spoken on this several times. This is the time of year we've said it many times. Gas prices tend to peak in April or May. Now, another interesting development before I talk about the price of oil, the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic states, I think we mentioned last podcast that they are switching to the cheaper blend of winter, to the more expensive blend of summer gasoline from winter. That specification change took effect earlier this week on the 15th. Actually, the close of business, the specification changed for gasoline in Mid-Atlantic and Northeastern states. So as we sit here, Matt, actually the national average has jumped to its highest level since last fall at $3.67 a gallon. And many of our friends listening in areas like Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine all of the gasoline in those states I just mentioned has made a very quick jump. They are now moving summer gasoline toward the pump. And with it, Matt, a pretty hefty increase of anywhere from 20 to 50 cents. Now, some of those prices have already gone up 10 or 20 cents. And so some stations may have already fully passed it along. But some areas, it may take a little bit longer. So word to those in the Northeast and Mid-Atlantic states, yes, your prices are going up. And it has everything to do with that switch to summer spec. 95% of the reason, Matt, for that jump in those areas is because the summer changeover. I can't eliminate maybe 5% as the price of oil. So with that out of the way, the West Coast has also been seeing some increases. California, Nevada, Arizona, Oregon, Washington, basically the West Coast, a lot of refinery maintenance happening there. So I actually put a number out this morning. My Gas Buddy Guy X account, California stockpiles of gasoline, Matt, get this, in the last month, gasoline stockpiles in California have fallen 27%. That's part of the reason why prices have gone up. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. So Californians have been, you know, burned, well, been getting hosed. I mean, price in California, Matt, up 58 cents from a month ago. That's part of the reason why, because gasoline inventories falling. That's the noise of gas prices surging. So, you know, when it's an inverse relationship, supply falls, prices rise.
Yeah, well, I know that even in my little neck of the woods, so to speak, I don't believe I've ever seen such a spread of prices or a disparity or despair, I suppose is a better way of putting it. I'm seeing prices even in my local area from $3.09 to $3.59 a gallon. That, I don't think I have ever seen such a large variance between the two price points here before. And I've lived here for a minute. Is there a reason why some of these stations are bolstering up to $3.59 a gallon? And I'm assuming the $3.09 will probably not remain that way for long?
Yeah, probably not. I mean, this is the time of year that markets are volatile, Matt. You know, as I mentioned, or I don't think I did mention, but the wholesale price of gasoline is, we're looking at it today, at this moment, stations are not yet getting this price drop, but wholesale prices are down 10 cents a gallon at this moment so far today. And that underlines why I'm explaining the wholesale price can vary significantly, maybe 10 to 20 cents, because some stations may only buy their fuel every few days. So if you're buying today, right now, you're going to end up paying 10 cents a gallon more than somebody who refills their tanks in about 6 hours, as long as the market holds. So there's a lot of differences, Matt, in why a station may charge more, but it's all about timing. When they bought that gasoline, did they pay more or did they pay less? And I know you're on a state boundary. There can be some funkiness around those state lines. But yeah, I'd be apt to say that 309 is probably going to slowly rise. The 359, and that, by the way, this is the difference, right? Is oftentimes not only is the wholesale price different, but the margin, right? The margin they get per gallon is going to be different. The guy that's selling at 359 could be making 20 cents, and the guy that's selling at 309 may be losing 20 cents. So that's, you know, a 40 cent a gallon difference. You ask why somebody would lose money. Well, they may not be paying attention to what their competition is priced at. So, you know, once they do pay attention, they'll probably raise prices. But yeah, there's just, you know, I hear that so often, that refrain of why is it so different? There's a lot of reasons.
Let me ask you this. You brought up something, you mentioned something which spurred my brain, and it made me think of really perhaps a way that a consumer would think. When I go inside a store, you know, typically speaking, we don't have little digital things that show that the price of, let's just say, a can of tuna, 99 cents, and then 5 hours later, it's $1.09. It stays fairly consistent. Maybe it'll change week to week, but somebody's got to go through and rip off the stickers and put on a new one. In gasoline world, or fuel world, period, I suppose diesel works the same way. If I just heard you correctly, somebody who bought gasoline this morning, as far as a station goes or a brand of stations, may pay a different price than somebody, a different gas station 6 hours later. Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And by the way, the market moves, right? The market's open during the course of the day. So what I'm trying to say here is that the drop today doesn't become effective until about 5 or 6 o'clock tonight after the market closes and what's called it settles. Then the local racks where stations send their tanker trucks, then they adjust their prices based on what the market does today. So it does take a little bit of time. And you know, it is interesting. I mentioned, you mentioned tuna. So gasoline is obviously a very, very highly used commodity. And so not every commodity, you know, you mentioned eggs, right? That is something that's also traded as a commodity. And like literally the price of eggs could change from one day to the next. You remember the egg craze? What was it? Last holiday.
It depends on what day it is.
and again, it underlying that if there's a massive jolt to supply, or in that case, there was a jolt to supply, right? Because a lot of chickens, I think it was avian flu, was impacting egg production significantly. But the thing is we use a lot more gasoline than we do eggs on a daily basis. So there's probably a lot more volatility in the daily fluctuations of gasoline, because a lot of things can impact the price of gasoline. Maybe not so many of them could impact the price of eggs, like I said, because egg demand is probably pretty pretty consistent. Gasoline demand does vary day by day, you know, season by season, but then you have different blends of gasoline required. So there's just a lot of things that go into it. And then to the last point, Matt, I know we mentioned prices jumping in the East Coast, the Mid-Atlantic, and then the West Coast. And the price of oil I mentioned heading opened up this week, it fell. What's really interesting, Matt, is as we talk here this afternoon, the price of oil is down some 3%. You know, just a few days ago, oil was at 87. We're now at 82.86 a barrel. And the wholesale price of gasoline is plummeting. And why that's interesting to me as an analyst, Matt, is because, as I mentioned, we have long said that the peak will be in April or May. Mm-hmm. Usually, this may not be the first sign, but usually there's a sign like what's happening today that the peak is in and people start running for the exits. And this could be the people are running for the exits kind of thing, is because oil is down a significant amount, 3%.
Yeah, 3% may not sound like a lot, but when the price of a barrel of oil, and if I'm not mistaken, a barrel of oil is only 42 gallons, not the traditional 55, 3% actually adds up fairly quickly when that price is already $80 or $90 a barrel. I mean, 3% is quite a bit. So let me ask you this. Role-playing for just a moment, you did see prices of oil go up when Iran launched its attack directly on Israel. Oil is down today as we are recording this. What happens if Israel retaliates, as they say they are planning mm-hmm. to do, against Israel directly? Do you see a reversal of this fall, or do you think it will just be kind of wait and see?
Well, it is a wait and see, but we could throw some hypotheticals out there. And
I think it's probably a very likely idea that, it's probably not a bad idea to do that.
Well, and you know, it all depends on the degree, the response. Is it a small response? If it is, a small impact to oil. Is it a major response? Then major impact to the price of oil potentially, right?
So basically,
it depends on the degree.
Yeah, so if Israel says, okay, well, you launched 500 things toward us, we're going to launch 500 things toward you, that could be very different than a very small response.
Yeah, it certainly could. But I think where we stand today, Matt, is that the chances of that, right? Iran's attack was what, Saturday? I think this is when it started. Local time?
Local time in Israel and Iran, it was actually early Sunday morning, but yes, absolutely.
So the attack occurred Sunday. It's now Wednesday, and so we haven't seen much response from Israel. So every hour that progresses without a response from Israel then, you know, lowers the chance or potential. So we'll have to see, though. Now, we have to look at comments. I think you mentioned there have been some comments out there on Israel, but they seem very torn on how to potentially respond. And the U.S. has warned them, if Israel responds, the U.S. is not participating. So I think there's some pretty big signals that Israel may be leaning towards not retaliating, but we'll have to see. But I think, Matt, for now, and I said this to a couple of reporters earlier today, it does seem like there may be some light at the end of the tunnel. And now I know the irony, right, of saying that there might be some light at the end of the tunnel. People in the Northeast and New England and the Mid-Atlantic states are like, shut up, our gas prices are going through the roof today. And the West Coast is like, yeah, be quiet. That, you know, prices are still going up. But looking down, Matt, maybe 2 or 3 weeks from now, I'm getting a little bit more confident that we may be closing in on the high water mark for the spring. Now, like you, right? You don't have a crystal ball. I don't either.
Right.
So if Israel does retaliate, that changes the game. If a refinery goes down unexpectedly, that changes the game. But the odds are still that prices are peaking or peak in April or May. And we're halfway through April. And we're getting closer to May. So the odds are getting higher, Matt, that we're, if we haven't peaked, we're getting closer to that. So I like to give people some optimism. I know prices are going up. Nobody likes it, right? I know, I hear you Mid-Atlantic folks, prices are, you know, surging there. But also I look forward to prices plateauing because I like to see prices going down. And I think we're getting closer to that every day.
Yeah, I will say, and this is a fairly credible source, the Jerusalem Post, well, credible whenever we're talking, obviously, about Israel. They are quoting multiple sources within the Israeli Defense Force saying that the IDF has decided on the type, but not the timing of a counterstrike on Iran. Will that turn out to be true? Well, it remains to be seen, obviously, but they are quoting multiple high-level sources within the IDF as the reason why they have typed up that story. You and I remember years ago interviewing you when I was a reporter and a news anchor in places like Tampa and Chicago, and this was always the fear point. What will happen in the Middle East? It has been ingrained in our minds for, you know, decades now that Iran and Israel are adversaries. And if that powder keg should ever be lit, then God help us all. I mean, that is a paraphrasing, but the reality is that is something that people have talked about for decades. Well, we're, I don't know that we're here, but we kind of are. And exactly how that, you know, what happens, you're right. Nobody's got a crystal ball. What happens? And it's kind of a scary thing. Will calmer and cooler heads prevail and prevent us from going into what we would, I guess, consider the abyss? Or do, you know, does the exact opposite happen, for lack of a better way of paraphrasing it? You know, there's a lot there. Are there any other pressures that is creating a price point with oil out there? You mentioned, obviously, a supply, a bit of a lesser supply as well. Is there anything domestically that's creating pressure on oil prices other than that flip over to the reformulated summer blend?
Well, not so much. We did get an Energy Information Administration report today. It does show that refineries are still doing maintenance. In fact, utilization was rather steady for the last week. That's an important metric, by the way, this time of year, for those who may not know, is, you know, we look at these numbers on a daily basis. This government report generally comes out every Wednesday. And right now, Matt, there's a lot of attention that I pay to refineries, right? Because they're doing maintenance. When are they going to be done? Because that holds the key to knowing when prices will peak. Well, unfortunately, it does look like utilization, which basically is a measure of how much of their capacity refineries are using, utilization dropped 0.2 percentage points last week. So that still indicates that there's a lot of maintenance happening. The current utilization rate is 88.1%, and that simply means that of the total capacity last week, refineries utilized 88.1% of their available capacity. Now, I'm hopeful that that number should increase in the coming weeks, because that would mean that refineries are done with their maintenance and they're starting to reopen their facilities and produce more gasoline. So I would say that by May, no later than May, which is only a couple of weeks away, the utilization number needs to be or should be above 90%. And if it doesn't get there, that could be a warning sign. So that's something I look for on a weekly basis with this data from the government, to watch the utilization rates. So again, kind of debunking my own potential thesis that maybe the price increases aren't over, and maybe the big drop in the price of oil and the wholesale gasoline price today isn't the sign that the top is in. But again, I still maintain that we're pretty close to seeing the peak in price, at least for the short term.
All right, I'm going to throw out a news headline for you to comment on and see exactly see exactly what you say about this.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have no idea what this headline is, by the way.
No, you do not. The Bank of America is saying that a direct Iran-Israel war could spike oil by $30 to $40 a barrel. You think that's truth or false?
I think that that could be possible. But again, all of it depends on the degree, right? But that's plausible. You know, what are we at, 85? Yeah, we could see triple digit oil and beyond that if there was a major and significant escalation. I think that is a lower potential right now, though, for the reasons I mentioned, because there's a lot of pressure on Israel not to retaliate. So, but that's potential. But that doesn't mean it's imminent.
Another headline, Iran is in for the long haul with oil tanker hijacks, according to experts inside the United States. Obviously, if you're going to continue to hijack oil tankers, oil is moving oil around for processing. Will that have an impact on oil prices?
Well, I don't have that story here in front of me, but that would be an interesting one because, you know, there's always the potential, like the Houthis, right, going after vessels in the Red Sea has disrupted the flow of oil and other things that flow through that region. You know, that may have less of an impact because there's a lot of crude carriers that you know, I'd have to see the details, but I don't think is going to have a significant impact based on the here and now.
Well, let's hope so. I actually just sent you a link to the story there as well, so you can maybe take a look at that. Now, there is a lot of things going on in the United States House, Ukraine, Israel aid, and other aspects.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any of those things creating a blip on the radar with regard to oil prices or anything along those lines?
Not so much. I mean, certainly interesting, right? The Speaker of the House, was it Mike Johnson?
Yes.
Hopefully I have that right.
No, that's correct.
You know, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, this potential deal. Conservatives don't like it, right? MTG has been aligned up against it. But no, none of these really would impact the price of oil. And I think the government is, right, the potential shutdown that we talked about just a couple of weeks ago, I believe now for the next couple of months they agreed to funding, correct?
As everything is somewhat volatile in the United States House of Representatives over the past year or two, that is the working theory right now. I think that's the safest way that you and I sitting here can say that. But yes, for right now, that does seem to be the case.
Yeah. So, you know, not a whole lot there to talk about. Interesting politically, but not so much of an impact for the price of what we're paying at the pump. But yeah, you know, Matt, with that changeover, with the prices, gas prices jumping in the Mid-Atlantic and Northeast, this basically concludes the transition to summer gasoline. So, you know, most of the nation is now starting to get that at the gas pump. That's a lot of the reason why prices here in Chicago now at a lot of stations are back above the $4 a gallon mark. Keep in mind, there's a lot of different blends. In fact, I shared this morning on X, if you go to Gas Buddy Guy on X, I shared a map of summer gasoline requirements, or I should say summer blends of gasoline and the requirements. And now the map I shared is a bit old. So full disclosure, the map is from 2004, but I wanted to share it so that people knew what drives summer gasoline prices up. It's not just the cost of summer gasoline, but as you look at this map from 20 years ago, you get some sense for how difficult, how many blends of summer gasoline there are. There's different dates. There's different requirements. If you look at Texas, for example, the eastern half of Texas, back in 2004, there were three blends required. So it's not just the cost of summer gasoline that pushes prices up. It's getting the type of gasoline that is needed in these given areas for the correct dates, right, and having no refineries go down.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, look at that map I sent you. It's
right.
Just, by the way, for those, you know, this map from 2004, again, if you get on Gas Buddy Guy on X, you'll see a U.S. map that says U.S. gasoline requirements, and there are 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16. There are 17 different types of summer gasoline in use in this map. And, you know, some areas like California, the entire state required cleaner burning gasoline. And there are some areas that are as small as, like, look, Matt, at the graphic. The Missouri side of St. Louis
right.
uses a different type of gasoline than the Illinois side of St. Louis. I mean, this is why summer gasoline, you know, we always just say, oh, it's summer gasoline, but this is part of the nuance, why the logistical nightmare of supplying this is what adds to the pain at the pump every spring.
Yeah, having grown up near St. Louis, I'm very familiar with exactly what you're talking about there. And in 2004 and even earlier, even the local meteorologist would do that clean air situation. And we were having so many red days back in the day when you had that scale and so much smog in the air. I will openly say the reformulated gasoline has seemingly helped with that. Yeah, there are still some unhealthy days, but not seemingly as many as we did, you know, in the 1990s and 2000s.
And exactly. Great point there, Matt. And that's the whole point that this summer gasoline program exists, right? I still get a lot of questions on, is this a farce? Is it required? So, you know, let's address that here a minute. Is that, yes, summer gasoline, it all stems back to the 1990 Clean Air Act amendments. Right. We realized while we're putting real bad stuff in the air, right, just like the Clean Water Act, we have cleaned up our act. And part of that stems from then the 1990 requirements, which gave the EPA authority to establish areas where air pollution is higher. And if you look at the map, Matt, by the way, you'll notice that a lot of areas where there's a big city, Missouri, Kansas City, St. Louis, Chicago, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, a lot
Atlanta,
of the areas.
Nashville, yeah, I see all of that. And Birmingham,
Houston. So the Clean Air Act basically gave the EPA authority to set up what are called non-attainment areas, basically areas or cities which could not get to the federal requirement for reducing pollution. And that is why some areas have different blends in different times of the year, because Matt, having cleaner gasoline in Nashville, especially now with the population boom, is critical, right? All the areas where there are the most amount of cars, that's where the regulations are more stringent. So again, in the bigger cities, you need cleaner gasoline to lead to cleaner air.
So why the different variations of reformulated gasoline? This has to be a thought that anyone who is not in the oil business and gasoline business would look and say, okay, fine, reformulated gasoline. Why do you need so many different variations of it? Why can't you just create one that works for everybody, making it easier on the refineries?
Well, you know, some places like California, California trumps the EPA. It's the only state in the nation where the California Air Resources Board has more authority or has authority over the EPA or jurisdiction over the EPA. So a lot of these different areas, Matt, you'll notice the different blends, and it generally corresponds to the population, right? In the areas that have the most population, you'll see it's RFG. That's the EPA's program for reformulated gasoline in the nation's biggest cities. In the areas that are not covered by RFG, you'll notice the RVP ratings, right, is a little lower. So generally, the lower the RVP, the less volatile the gasoline, the more stable, the less emissions. And so the bigger the city, the lower the RVP generally is. Like California right now today is using 5.99 RVP. Right. The difference, by the way, is that winter gasoline in most of the country is 15 RVP. And then in summer, it can go down to 9. 9 is the federal standard, and it can go even lower if you're in a big city.
Okay, so then the question mark that I have, the current administration, the Biden administration, is wanting to continue to get more and or basically continue to pollute less and less and less. What difference does it make if a vehicle is driving on the back roads in the middle of the Ozark Mountains versus, you know, in the deserts of New Mexico versus California? The tailpipe is still sending out some sort of exhaust. Why wouldn't the nation just create a standardized reformulated gasoline that no matter where you are, this is what it is, and therefore you're polluting less?
How dare you ask logical questions from our politicians?
I get myself in trouble every doggone time I start asking questions. I really
do. No, I mean, that's an excellent point. I think, Matt, because these regulations started to try and address problems that were acute in large cities. Right. The government didn't think, let's make all the air, you know, let's make all the gasoline more stable and less evaporative and less volatile. They thought, well, the problems are in these big cities. So, but the problem is now, if you look at this map, there's so much fragmentation. By the way, when I say fragmentation, all I think about is when I had to defrag my like Windows 95 computer. I don't know why. And you, it looked like this map, right? When you ran defrag, it would like it would like be moving portions of the hard drive. Anyway, so like a Windows little Windows 95. Yeah, you'd have to leave your computer defragging. But this is it's an excellent question because you have all these different blends. Again, if you could reduce the amount of, you know, back in 2004, 17 blends, if you could reduce that down to one,
then wouldn't that make gas prices more stable because the refineries don't have to put out 15 different blends? It's it's a standardized blend. And in theory, wouldn't that maybe knock a penny or two off during the summer months?
Oh, probably more than that. But it would also halt the massive increase in prices, Matt. Because here's the other problem when you make this switch over from summer to winter to summer to winter is that you can never build up supply, right? Because you're constantly resetting it to zero. Every time we switch back to summer gasoline, there's no supply of it. Refineries start every February and March. They start building the supply of summer gasoline. But then when we switch back to winter gasoline, it's not like they store the extra summer stuff because it will varnish. So every time we make the switch back to summer, there's basically no supply right off the bat. Supply is only created over time. And so essentially, that's where the bump comes from every spring, is that there's no leftovers from last year. And that's why prices go up, because supply of summer gasoline is tight right at the start of the summer driving season. Then, but then by Labor Day, the supply has built up to adequate levels. And that's why prices at the pump usually peak in April or May, because once refineries start cranking up output, the supply of gasoline, right, the amount of inventory goes up and prices tend to drop over the course of the summer. But that's the million dollar question.
Yeah,
is why don't we go to one blend?
Why wouldn't the EPA revisit that when it's like, well, we've got to reduce emissions and quit polluting and we've got certain benchmarks that we need to meet. Let's look at what we're doing right now and let's see if we can make it even better. And the refineries have obviously the capability of making reformulated gasoline. It's been doing it now for several decades. Why not create a really good stringent where it doesn't matter if you're in Idaho or Florida or New Mexico or Maine during the summer months? This is how, as a collectively as a nation, this is how we are going to help reduce the pollution in the air that everyone is very concerned.
Get out of here with your smart ideas.
I'm sorry, I get myself in trouble every doggone time, but here we are. I just think it makes logical sense.
It does. It absolutely does, and it would help the long-term, you know, price rally that happens every spring. It would absolutely help. And by the way, it's always curious because the Biden administration, even John Podesta yesterday, said that they're doing everything they can, or they're watching, they stay prepared to do everything they can to make sure gas prices don't keep going up. But at the same time, it's like, do we have to shout from the rooftops, hey guys, why don't you change the summer gasoline program? It's like nobody listens.
Yeah, I am so perplexed and confused by it because, I mean, if that's really what you want to do, great. If you're really wanting to help the environment, then help the environment. Like I said, vehicle is a vehicle is a vehicle. It doesn't matter if you're in the mountains, the Smoky Mountains of Tennessee, or in the flatlands of Kansas, it's still putting out exhaust.
You're 100% right. We should just title this episode, What Politicians Need to Do to Bring Down Gas Prices, and see if they listen to it.
I mean, I could go on a soapbox on multiple different avenues if we're really talking about
it. I think we're already on a soapbox.
Yeah, right? So what you're not wrong. So what else is there out there to, I mean, we've talked about Iran and Israel, which is of a major concern, non-laughable major concern, understandably. We've talked about, obviously, gasoline requirements, reformulated, different thoughts and other aspects. Yep. I think, honestly, where are we looking at the next 7 days or so? What are we looking at there?
Well, I think, Matt, over the next 7 days, I think, like I said, those areas, the Mid-Atlantic, the Northeast, and the West Coast will probably see prices inching up. But beyond that, Matt, I think we're getting close. I think the national average will easily hit $3.70 a gallon in the next few days. But beyond that, Matt, again, I think we're probably within, I want to say, 10 cents a gallon of hitting the top. Hopefully I'm not wrong on that. But I think the good news is that in the month of May, I think we'll eventually start to see gas prices recede. And that should be the case through the month of June. June last year, Matt, by the way, prices were inching down for most of the month, and it's not impossible that we could settle into a range of, you know, closer to 350 gallons. So, you know, I don't want to give false optimism, but I'm feeling optimistic that, you know, gosh, this is the time of year that, you know, I'm a broken record. Refinery maintenance, summer gasoline, demand, summer gasoline, refinery maintenance. I'm so looking forward to having all of that stuff in the rear view, and we're close. We're almost there.
Well, I tell you what, we'll be keeping you up to date right here on Over a Barrel. And as we said last week, we are monitoring the situation in the Middle East because it does and can or could have a potential impact, and in some cases, a large impact on oil prices and therefore the local price at the pump. We will continue to monitor that in the coming weeks, and hopefully, like everybody else hopes, we can maybe hopefully see things calm down just a little bit there. But if it doesn't, we'll monitor it, and who knows, maybe we even have to do a special report of Over a Barrel. And of course, we are very much willing to do that just to keep you informed of what's going on. And I tell you what, Patrick, what are the ways that folks can send us an email if they have questions, comments, and all of that stuff? Give us all that info.
Yeah, we'll go through the rundown. podcast@gasbuddy.com is our email address. We'd love to hear from you, any feedback on the show, or if you'd like to hear a topic address for a future show. You can interact with both of us on X. I'm at Gas Buddy Guy. You're Over a Barrel Matt. He's over there. And our show is Over a Barrel Show on both Twitter or X and Facebook. So you can find us on the show socials. Please like and follow us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you're listening to this podcast. But for Matt and I, thanks for joining us for another week, right, Matt? And
absolutely,
we'll see you next time.